You're listening to Stop Feeding the Predators on City of Angels Recovery Radio. My name is Lynn, and I am going to give a little more education about why children don't tell when they're sexually assaulted, and how to raise them in a way that would help them to be more likely to tell. And then we're going to talk a little bit about some of the healing process for the emotional factor, the psychological factor of childhood sexual assault. There are no graphic details, so this is a safe program to listen to. And the first thing I want to say is some children do tell, and they might tell immediately after it happens. They might be able to get away and immediately go and tell. Other children may not. And the circumstances, the education that that child has had, the age of the child certainly, the relationship between the child and the aggressor, if it was someone they knew, if it was a total stranger, all of these things are going to factor in as to if children tell, when they tell, who they tell, and has a lot to do with what happens next. Sometimes kids don't tell because they don't know that they should. When children are sexually assaulted, they do not like it. And I know that might seem rather simplistic to say, but a child, again, I'm talking about when I was a three-year-old, you know, I didn't know what was happening. I knew I didn't like it and I didn't want it to happen, but I didn't understand what was happening. And my gut reaction was what told me that it was wrong, like an instinctive feeling. If you see a car skidding out of control on the ice, your gut tells you this is going to be bad. And children instinctively have a gut reaction to what's happening to them, whether it's good, whether it's bad. It's an instinct that we all have that helps us know right from wrong. Sometimes children are threatened. You know, if you tell anyone, I'm going to say that you wanted it. I'm going to kill your parents. I'm going to hurt your little sister. You know, I'm going to steal your cat. Whatever. Sometimes children are threatened, and they have no reason to doubt these threats, so they don't tell. Sometimes they're simply told, don't tell anybody. Sometimes the aggressor will say, if you tell, you're going to be in trouble. If you tell, I'm going to be in trouble, and you don't want me to be in trouble. If you tell, they'll take you away from your parents. So sometimes the aggressors do plant, you know, little thoughts in the kids' heads that the kids are going to be in trouble in some way, or that whoever gets in trouble after it happens will be the fault of the child, instead of having the intellect to understand, this person did something wrong to me, they're in trouble, they need to be in trouble, they need to be, you know, dealt with, punished, whatever, for what they've done. Children tend to think, I'm going to get in trouble if anybody finds out this happened. I know this wasn't supposed to happen, but I didn't stop it while it was happening. I didn't say no. Things like that. Sometimes just the guilt and the shame of what happened. I heard a story about Loretta Lynn, and she went on her honeymoon, and that was the first time for anything like that. And the next morning, she was terribly embarrassed about what had happened. And it's just, that's the same kind of mindset that children have. You know, again, she was significantly older, and still, this wasn't something that, you know, was a commonplace thing. It was an unusual thing. It was different, and it was something that she had trouble understanding the context of it. Kids are the same way. You know, they know that wasn't right. They know that wasn't supposed to happen. It hasn't happened before, and it was just weird. And it's the same as if you suddenly saw a spaceship land in your front yard. Okay, do I tell people? Are they going to think I'm nuts? Did anybody else see this happen? Does anyone else know? Should I say anything, or will I be written off as being a kook? For kids, it's the same kind of thing. This wasn't supposed to happen. I don't know what this was. I didn't like it. And they have trouble processing what happened. They have trouble processing what to do about it. And many times the aggressor is someone that is known to the child and is someone that the child was told they could trust. You know, either it's a parent, a grandparent, a sibling, a relative in some way, shape, or form. This was a person that the child was told could be trusted. So if this person that the child was told they could trust did this weird thing, then maybe they're not supposed to tell. Maybe it was supposed to happen. Again, if you go back to when you were a child and think about the things you thought of and the way that you thought, if you think about how you used to think about clouds, and then, you know, you got into fifth grade and you learned about clouds and particles and all these different things, and then you looked at clouds a little differently. For a child, they only know what a child knows. And it can be difficult to know this isn't supposed to happen. Even though their gut reaction is telling them it's not, it's hard for them to get their brains to understand what to do next. Whether or not this is commonplace, if this is going to happen again. It's difficult for them to understand what to do now. And if you're a parent or you know any parents whose children have been sexually assaulted, think about the parents. They don't even know what to do. And yet you're expecting a 3-year-old or 2-year-old or, you know, a 7-year-old, you're expecting them to know how to handle when they've been raped, when you're the parent and you don't even know how to handle when your child's been raped. So take a little bit of the pressure off of them, if you will. And stress is another thing. If it's a single parent home or even with two parents, you know, families can be under a lot of stress, financial and, you know, obligations for activities and things like that. And if parents are already stressed, whether it's, you know, father and mother, just a single parent, whether the child lives with a grandparent, you know, whomever. But if the stress level in the house is such that the parents of the child or whoever the child recognizes as being parents, if that person says things like, oh my gosh, if one more thing happens, I don't know what I'm going to do. I am so overwhelmed. I just can't take one more thing. And certainly if a child has been sexually assaulted, that would be a pretty big thing. And I'm positive there are very few parents out there who would not have stress reacting to their child being sexually assaulted. So I'm not suggesting that parents protect their children from their stress level, but I am suggesting that parents find a way to have open communication to where children understand, mommy's stressed, but this is important and I need to tell. Find a way for your kids to know that you have time to listen to them, not to talk to them, to listen to them. You know, when I was growing up, there was the talk of don't let anyone touch your body where your swimsuit covers you. And that was the attempt at helping children to learn how to be protected from being sexually assaulted. And they would say things like, anywhere that your swimsuit touches, nobody's allowed to touch you there. except for if it's a doctor or if it's like your parents giving you medicine or helping you with a bath or something like that. And that is really confusing to kids. I can't stress enough how confusing that is to kids, especially when you consider that some 90% or higher is the percentage of children that are assaulted by aggressors that are known to them. In other words, most of the time, the person that is sexually assaulting the child is someone the child knows and was told that they should trust. So it could be a parent, it could be someone claiming to give medicine. I know of one case where the aggressor was giving medicine. It truly was medicine. It was cough syrup. It was giving medicine to some of the children. And it is not known if that was done so that those children would sleep while a different child was sexually assaulted, or if it was done so that those children could be sexually assaulted also. It was found out later that one child was sexually assaulted, was raped. And again, you know, well, he gave us medicine. You know, we were supposed to have medicine. Okay. Again, there's a lot of children that have grown up being sexually assaulted, not understanding that they didn't need to have this medicine rubbed onto their chest every night, or this medicine rubbed, you know, here, there, or wherever. Aggressors are very skilled at what they do. And please understand, I'm not saying anything that the aggressors don't already know. What I am saying is information for those of us who don't think like that, to understand that kind of thinking so that we can protect our kids. Kind of the same as the 9/11 planes and such. You know, it doesn't occur to me to get into a plane and crash it into a building to make a political statement and kill people. I don't think like that. That doesn't occur to me. But it's important for government, so on, to understand the thinking so that they can help prevent things like that in the future. Same idea with kids, with the aggressors. You have to understand some of how the aggressor works in order to keep your kids safe. Nobody likes to talk about sexual assault, because it's not a fun topic. Every one of these shows that I do for City of Angels is a difficult thing to start. Sometimes I make recordings and I delete them because it wasn't coming across well. Nobody likes to talk about sexual assault, but if we pretend that this doesn't happen and we stay silent about it, we have guaranteed that these people will get away with it, and that they will continue to get away with it. And if I don't take some action to protect my kids, then my kids are more likely to be victimized again. Maybe not by the same person if I remove that person from the children's lives, but if I don't talk to my kids and help them understand that it wasn't their fault, they're more likely to be victimized. I've heard they say, you know, again, nobody should touch you in your swimsuit area unless it's your parents, you know, helping you with a bath or giving you medicine, or if it's a doctor and such. And I had to go to a doctor for kindergarten shot update and all that kind of stuff back in the day, as they say. We had to go to the doctor and get clearance that our health was good, maybe get updated on shots, and then we were allowed to start school. And I went to the doctor's office, and I had not been to that doctor very many times. It was very rare that I went to the doctor at all. And so I was, you know, 5 years old, and went in to see the doctor, and he did whatever exam and whatever he needed to do. And I honestly don't remember any of that. I know my mom and I were in the room, and I'm sure he was asking her questions and checking my eyes and ears and looking in my throat and my nose and all that kind of stuff. But I really don't remember most of that. I do remember that he said, well, I'm all done, and her health looks really good. So if you, he was talking to my mom, if you would like to step out to the desk, you can go ahead and give them this paper and pay your copay, and I will finish up a couple things in here, and then I'll send your daughter out. And my mom said, great, you know, thinking, let's be efficient, let's get this on the way. And my mom walked out of the room, and the doctor closed the door behind her. I do not know if he locked it or not. I don't think it matters, but after my mom went out of the room, he closed the door behind her, and he raped me. And he was a doctor. So he said doctor type things as he was doing it. So again, this is confusing to me, and I do not know if I'm supposed to tell. Am I not supposed to tell? Did my mom know that's what's going to happen? That's why she left, so she could do paperwork and finish up while he was doing this? And I don't know. You know, I'm five. I have no idea why this is happening. It doesn't feel right, but you know what? Him looking in my nose didn't feel right either. You know, him putting that tongue depressor and making me almost throw up, that didn't feel right. That was horrible. That was awful. So all of these things during the exam, they weren't normal. They didn't feel right. My gut was reacting. This is odd. But when he raped me, my gut went into to overtime reaction of, this is wrong, this is not right, this is awful, he shouldn't be doing this. But I didn't know how to tell him to stop, because he's a doctor and I'm 5 years old, and it has made clear in society that children should obey, you know, what adults tell them to do. And so the idea of saying, you know, nobody should touch your private parts or any part of you covered by a swimsuit unless they're a parent giving you medicine or a doctor or something like that, that stuff doesn't work. So I'm helping you understand why kids don't tell. The believability, you know, no one's going to believe this happened. You know, this aggressor is somebody that I've known for a long time, and I still don't understand what happened. I'm having trouble believing what happened. So how can I tell anyone else? Because they're not going to believe me either, because I don't even believe me. And now I'm supposed to tell somebody? This doesn't seem right. I don't think it happened. Maybe it didn't happen. And sometimes kids will tell themselves, it didn't happen. It wasn't that bad. He didn't mean it. And again, I'm using he and she based on my own personal experience being the female victim and having male aggressors. I don't mean to diminish or pretend that there is no female aggressors and no male victims. I don't mean to imply that at all. Boys, young boys, men are sexually assaulted. Sometimes they are assaulted by women. Sometimes female aggressors assault female victims. And I know that's odd for some people to understand, but it does happen. And I want to emphasize that, because there are people who say, oh, I left my daughter with my best friend while I went out and did, you know, this, that, grocery shopping, whatever. I trust my best friend, you know, whatever. Okay, just because your child's a female and your best friend's a female does not guarantee that something wouldn't happen. And again, I'm not trying to make people paranoid. I'm not trying to make you afraid of leaving your children alone with anybody. I'm trying to emphasize that sexual assault, rape, sexual abuse, molestation does happen with male and female victims, and it happens with male and female aggressors. And a female aggressor sexually assaulting a female victim does not mean that either one of them are gay, lesbian, whatever the political term is. Same for males. A male who rapes a male does not mean that either of them are gay. So for someone to say, well, I know so-and-so, and he's a good guy, he's not gay, so I let him spend time with my son. Okay, that may be fine, but you need to make sure that you understand that you and your son have a comfort level, that your son knows how to defend himself against someone if they were to try to sexually assault him, and your son knows a comfort level to talk with you if something does happen. Again, please don't have a false sense of security that because someone is a good person and you've known them for years and they've never said or done anything inappropriate, don't get into a false sense of security where you think it couldn't happen. And please do not get into a false sense of security where if it does happen, you tell your child they must have misunderstood or that you don't believe your child. Not being believed is sometimes harsher than the sexual assault, because the person doing the assaulting obviously is a sick individual and they need some help. When a child goes to someone that they trust, parent, whoever it is, and says, this horrible thing happened to me, if that child is not believed, it is the same as if the assault just happened again, because you are not respecting me as a child, you're not respecting me, you're not listening to what I said, you're not validating that something is wrong and that I don't feel okay. There's an insurance commercial right now out, and they say, you just bought a new car, you're driving down the road, and boom, you're in an accident. That's terrible. Then you call your insurance company, and the insurance company won't give you the full amount of your car because that's the way the insurance works, and it's almost the same as being in another accident. Well, sexual assault and then not being believed is the same kind of thing. It's bad enough that this horrible thing happened, but when you go to the people that are supposed to be helping you, when you go to the people that are supposed to be the protectors, the ones who are supposed to believe you and love you unconditionally and help you, when they don't believe you, it is like having the assault all over again. So ways to get your kids to be more likely to tell you when something happens is respecting your child's boundaries. I know some parents, you know, every night before the kids go to bed, they give them a hug and tuck them in. That's fine. I have no problem with that. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not telling you not to do. But what I'd like you to think about is if someone else touches your child, see how your child reacts to it. I know growing up, there were some relatives that I didn't see very often, and right before we would get to leave, I wanted to go up and give that person a hug because I didn't see them very often, and I didn't know when I'd see them again. And I was waiting for the parents to, you know, parents and that person to finish talking so that I could go up and give a hug without interrupting. And I wanted to hug them. It was okay. That was something I wanted to do. But I'm out sometimes and I see parents telling their kids, you know, go give aunt, uncle, whoever, so-and-so a hug. And the kids might, you know, hesitate. And the parents say, you know, go give whoever a hug. And that's not respecting the child's boundaries. That's like if your boss came up to you at work and said, "I'm introducing you to Stephanie, my new employee, and Stephanie, I'd like you to give my current employee a hug." That's kind of weird. I believe many people would agree. That's kind of weird. And it's also not right for a boss to impose physical contact between two employees. And it's the same with parents. You might want your child to give a hug to whoever it is, but if your child doesn't feel instinctively, lovingly, compassionately, caringly that they should give that person a hug, the worst thing you can do is make them. If you're going to visit a relative that you rarely see, the person's on their deathbed, your child doesn't know them at all, the worst thing you can do is force your kid to give that person a hug, because your kid doesn't know them. What you can do is, over the course of the visit, incorporate your child into the conversation, have your child there. You know, if it's normal to be sitting with your child or hugging your child, you know, if that's a normal thing, then that's okay. You can do that. But give your child a sense of being included in the visit, and don't have, like, the adults visiting, and then right before the end, you tell your kid, "Oh, go give, you know, so-and-so a hug, because we may never see them again." Because it's just awkward. It's just weird. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel right. So if you incorporate your child into the conversation, into the visit, let your child talk to this person. Let your child get to know this person. Even if it's the first time they've met and they're never going to see them again, let the child decide, you know, at the end of the visit, do you want to give so-and-so a hug, or do you want to just wave goodbye? And let the child decide. It's empowering to children to know that they have the right to decide if they want to give a hug, if they want to give a kiss, if they just want to wave as they're leaving. It's very empowering to kids, and it's very respectful to kids. It gives them a sense that they know right from wrong. They know their comfort level. I know there are some children that have Asperger's syndrome and some other different, you know, there's kids that have different, I guess I call it different abilities. Their strengths are in certain categories versus others. And there are some kids that do not like to be touched, do not like to be held, do not like to be, you know, physically contacted in many ways. And to suddenly give someone like that a hug, I mean, you have just completely violated every bit of their being. And even if you were intending to be kind and loving and inclusive, instead you have horribly offended this child by hugging them, and that's something they hate. That's something they can't stand. So respecting your child's boundaries, let your child know it is up to them who touches them. And even going back to the idea of medicine, you know, if there's something medically wrong with your child and medicine needs to be applied to certain part or whatever, see if you can talk to your child about what it is that's being done, why it's being done, and let them go in the bathroom and do it themselves. You know, I mean, children need to learn to take care of themselves, and they need to learn to ask for help if they need it. You know, there's nothing wrong with explaining to your child, okay, you have to put this medicine on this, you have to do that. Now, you know, go in the bathroom, and if you need help, call me and I'll help you, but I'm trying to respect your body and I want you to be able to do it yourself. There's nothing wrong with that. And if the child says, "Hey, I need some help," you know, then you can say, "Okay, here's what needs to happen. Here's what I need to do. Is it okay if I do this?" And again, help your kids decide who touches them and when and where. With some people, again, how to get kids to be more likely to tell. kids will hear how their parents react to things in the news. If there's been a recent case of rape or child abduction or something like that, and the child overhears a parent say, "I would kill anybody that ever touched my kid. I would just absolutely kill them. I don't even care about how long I would go to jail. I would kill them if anybody touched my kids." Kids remember that. And even as confusing as it was for me to not know what was happening to me, was that okay? Was that not okay? I didn't know. I was confused. I knew that murder was wrong. That was kind of pretty easy. To kill someone is a bad thing. I knew that even at 3. And if someone says, "I would kill anybody that touched my kids," if your child hears you say that, you have pretty much guaranteed that your kid is not going to tell you. Think of it this way. Your child's just been sexually assaulted, and now you're going to go to jail for murder, and that child won't have you in their life. You might be okay with that. You might say it was worth it to know that that person can never hurt another child, but maybe it wasn't worth it to your child. Maybe your child thinks that it's better to have you in their life than to have that person dead. Especially at 3, 4, 5 years old, children need loving, nurturing parents. And children understand that if you kill someone, you're in trouble. It can be a difficult thing to let law enforcement handle a sexual assault case, especially when it's someone you know and your trust has been betrayed. But the best thing you can do for your child, for yourself, is to focus on your child. Be there for your child instead of abandoning your child to go and harm someone else. I know that can be a difficult concept, but as a child who was sexually assaulted, I assure you that what you will be giving to your child by being there for them, standing with them, helping them through it, is so much greater of an act and so much more healing for that child. There's nothing that compares to that. The amount of damage that you would do to the other person by usually baseball bats, the first thing people say, you know, if you go after the aggressor with a baseball bat, the damage that you would do to that person is nothing compared to the damage that you would be doing to your own child by leaving them, even if it's only for a moment, to go and destroy the other person. You know, think about when you are at your weakest, when you are at your most stressed, when you are at your most vulnerable, you need someone there to protect you. And there may be some families that say, "Well, mom stayed home with the kid and dad went out and killed the aggressor." But children need their parents. And moms and dads are equally important in the life of a child. And to think that one parent could be spared, you know, for prison to end the aggressor's life is not right. It's still something else the child loses out on. You know, I've been sexually assaulted by someone that I knew that my parents trusted, and now I also have to grow up without a dad. Or mom, you know, again, depending on the case and all that. But I'm just saying, enough bad has happened in the life of that child. Let's deal with law enforcement handling the aggressor and focus on helping the child regain trust, regain a sense of respect for themselves, a sense that it was not their fault. Let's focus on helping our children know that we believe them and helping them get rid of the guilt from what happened. Because anything you do to the aggressor is actually harmful to the child. I don't know how else to emphasize that other than just to put it in simple terms. If you abandon your child to harm someone else, you've still abandoned your child. Maybe think about it that way. Obviously, it's not a parent's intention to harm their child. They're wanting to end the possibility of that aggressor coming back and hurting their child again, or hurting another child. But to that child who has just been abused, now we've got abused and we've got abandoned. So it is very harmful to that child. Sometimes when parents say, you know, I hate whoever it is that was the aggressor, children feel guilt and shame from being sexually assaulted. And even though the parents are emphasizing that the hate is toward the aggressor, because the act was done to the child's part of the act, and the child feels some of that hate. Not sure, again, not sure how to make that any more clear. It's important that your kids know that you believe them, you still love them, make sure they know that you do not blame them. It's very comforting to say, this was not your fault. And it's comforting to hear that a lot when you're a kid. Because, you know, I tell people, you know, if you allow law enforcement to handle the aggressor, that child is going to hear, I believe you, it's not your fault, and I'm going to keep you safe from the parent or parents. The child will hear it again from the prosecutor, from the prosecuting attorneys, from victims' advocates. The child will hear it from probably 7 different people. I believe you. I'm sorry this happened. It wasn't your fault. That is helpful. To have a child be abused and a parent kills the aggressor, now you've got lots of time going to court because your parent is going to jail for killing the aggressor, and the child will hear things like, it's too bad that happened, it's a shame this happened, it's almost better if your dad didn't know, stuff like that. And I'm not making generalizations. Those are comments that have actually been made to victims. I know firsthand of a child that was sexually assaulted, and someone in the legal department actually said to that child, gosh, it's a shame this happened. It's almost better if you hadn't told. And that was said because the child's parent then, you know, harmed someone else, and that parent was in trouble then. And I can't even begin to talk about how sick it makes me that someone would say that to a kid. You know, that's obviously someone who's not dealt with sexual assault firsthand and was just trying to say nice words to make it all go away. Sometimes people say, you know, I'm sorry it happened, you'll feel better in time, you know, you'll get through this. And it's like, sexual assault is not really something you ever get over. There's always, especially childhood sexual assault, there's always the idea that there must be something about me that is so horrible that people feel like they can do this to me and get away with it. And it's sad that children grow up learning to not trust themselves. They grow up thinking that there's something wrong with them, that these predators are attracted to them. When my mom found out how many times I'd been sexually assaulted, she was very shocked, because she didn't know about them all. And someone else that I was talking to, not my mom, someone else I was talking to, when I told them about the conversation that my mom and I had, they made the comment, "Wow, it's almost better if you never told her all about all that, huh?" And I thought, why should I keep a secret to protect all those people that did mean things to me? And why should I have to carry the burden of all of that awfulness alone? You know, my mom went after something happened one time, my mom said, "You really have trouble letting go of things, don't you?" And that really hurt me, because that was not related to sexual assault at all. But that really hurt me, because if she had known how much I didn't tell her, you know, it was just, she didn't understand that my childhood annoyance complaint about something stupid was the only thing I felt safe to complain about. You know, and the idea that I couldn't let that go was because there were all these other things in my past that I was still hanging on to that nobody knew I was hanging on to. You know, the being raped at 3 and being raped by the doctor at 5, I mean, those were things I was hanging on to. So when I got raped when I was 13, you better believe I would complain if we were having something for dinner that I didn't want. Because I was sick of having things I didn't want. I was tired of one more thing that I don't like in my life. And I know that's really petty and it's really stupid, but that's who I was. I was somebody that was raped and I didn't tell. And I carried that guilt and that shame with me. And I didn't know what to do with it. It wasn't safe. I didn't feel safe. I didn't feel like I would be believed if I said these things that had happened. So instead, I was very verbal about the things I didn't like. Pepperoni on my pizza. You know, I don't like pepperoni on my pizza. Get half without pepperoni, but you can't eat half a pizza. Well, I don't like pepperoni and I don't want pepperoni on my half of the pizza. Oh my gosh, how annoying, right? What a complaint. But again, I was carrying around so much that I didn't feel safe to reveal, that when something came up that I felt safe to complain about it, I did. I throughout my childhood, I took every opportunity to complain about the things that I felt were not right. Ironically, except for the really big things, like being raped, I kind of forgot to say that one because that was too big. I didn't know who to tell. I didn't know how to tell. I didn't know what would happen. I didn't know if I would be in trouble. And I still didn't know if it was supposed to happen. So at one point during this broadcast, I made a comment that sexual assault is not something people like to talk about. And I've shared a lot of information, and it's big and it's awful. But it's education. So I would like to offer some hope that the sooner a child reveals that they have been sexually assaulted, from the time it happens to the time the child reveals it, the sooner they are able to reveal what has happened to them, the better the chances for healing for that child emotionally. When the child is believed, regardless of when they tell, whether they tell right after it happened or 10 years later or 20 years later, when the person is believed, genuinely believed, that begins the healing process as well. It validates for that person that what they went through should not have happened. It validates their gut response that this was wrong and it wasn't my fault. And instead of leaving, again, regardless of when the child tells, instead of leaving that child to go and be mean to the aggressor, it's more important that you stay and listen to the child. Hear what the child needs to share about what happened. And whether the child reveals, you know, details of physically what happened or not is completely up to the child. Obviously, a forensic examiner, forensic interviewing, which is when someone in law enforcement, they have a special group of people that will do an interview with the child so that the child only has to be interviewed once. And obviously, at that time, some of the graphic nature needs to be revealed by the child so that proper charges can be filed against the aggressor. But I'm talking about if your 4-year-old comes up to you right before bed and says, I don't want to go to that babysitter tomorrow because the babysitter's boy does mean things to me. A good parent says, what kind of mean things does he do to you? I'm sorry that happens. Tell me about the mean things he does to you and I'll see if I can make him stop. A bad parent says, well, you just put up with it. You just do mean things back to him and it'll all be okay. Because you don't know what the mean things are. And a good parent finds out what a child means by saying mean things. If the boy is doing mean things and he is smacking her on the head every time he walks past her, she's going to say, every time he walks past me, he touches me on the head. Every time he walks past me, he smacks me on the head. Every time he walks past me, he bops me on the head. You're going to get details. If the boy kicks her feet under the table while she's trying to eat lunch, you're going to get details. If the child says, he's just mean to me, he's just mean to me, he's mean to me, I don't like it when he's mean to me, guess what? If you're not getting details, something bigger's going on. Because children who are kicked under the table, who are bopped on top of the head, reveal details because those things probably happen in front of others. If the babysitter's son is taking the child to a back bedroom or putting a blanket over top of her and having her in the corner of the room with no other adults around, he's probably being mean to her in ways that you were not prepared to hear about. And again, I reinforce, you need to believe your child. You need to ask, tell me what you mean by he's being mean to you. If your child says, he's just being mean to me, he's just mean to me all the time and I don't like it, respect your child enough to not have them go back to that babysitter, or to see if that babysitter's son is someone that does not have to be around the kids when they're there or whatever. Believe your child enough, respect your child enough that there's something really wrong and it's not just feet being kicked under the table. I'd also like to emphasize that if your child says, I don't like him, he bops me on the head every time he walks past, respect your child enough to say, the bopping on the head must end. The kicking feet under the table during lunch must end. Give your child the respect and the rights to their own body back. You know, I know little kids, you know, sit and watch TV, and sometimes they sit together and sometimes they just don't want to sit together. And sometimes children will complain, you know, he's sitting on my pillow. What are you talking about? Well, the couch has three pillows and there's three of us on the couch and he's on my pillow and I don't want him to be on my pillow. It might seem petty, it might seem stupid, but you know what? Tell him to stay on his pillow. Give your children their rights to assert authority over their own bodies, over their own personal space. And if you think that your child's complaint is not a big deal, then I challenge you, parents. If you think the child's complaint is not a big deal, then as a parent, you should be able to fix it with no problem. When kids get believed, when kids get the respect that as adults we tend to give each other freely, but when kids get the respect, they tend to respect themselves more. It's very difficult to be mean to somebody when you're comfortable in your own skin. And when you feel good about yourself, you don't need to go be mean to other people to try to make you feel better about you. And when we can help our kids to have that reassurance that they are correct when they say he needs to stay on his pillow, when the kids are respected and told, you're right, he should not bop you on the head every time he walks past, we will put an end to that. You are empowering your children to know, I stood up for myself. I was right when I did it. I deserve respect. I deserve to not be touched unless I want it. And you help children to be empowered. And that helps children to tell faster, sooner, if they are sexually assaulted. Which takes us full circle right back to the beginning of this broadcast. Why kids don't tell. Some kids have not been respected, empowered, reinforced that they have rights. And when we treat our children respectfully, when we help them to know your body is for you to learn how to take care of, and for you to decide who touches it and when. And I'm not even getting into the whole, you know, no sexual activity until after you're married kind of stuff. I mean, that's individual families, that's individual peoples, that's, you know, those are decisions beyond what I'm talking about. All I'm saying is a child, and I don't care how old you are, any child should have the right to not be sexually assaulted. And I don't know too many people that would disagree with that comment. As parents, grandparents, daycare providers, doctors, social workers, neighbors, teachers, counselors, it is important that we find a comfort level with ourselves that we can empower these kids to grow up and not be sexually assaulted. For them to understand, this doesn't feel right, I don't like this, and to actually raise children that can verbalize, stop it, I told you stop it, don't touch me. Most children that are sexually assaulted don't even fight back because no one ever gave them the right to fight back against an adult. because we, as parents, we constantly tell our kids, you need to mind because I'm the adult and I said. And we need to help children understand respect for their own bodies, that mommy's going to come tuck you in. Do you want me to give you a hug, or do you want to give me a hug, or do you want both of us to give each other a hug? That is so empowering to a child. Get in bed and give me a hug. That's demanding. I know I've said that many times to my kids, but it's demanding. Time to go to bed. Do you want me to give you a hug? Do you want to give me a hug? Or do you want to both give each other a hug? That's empowering. Now, if you're not hugging people, you might not say that. You might say, time to go to bed. Do you want a hug? Do you want to hug me? Or do you want to just wave really big? You know, give kids options. Give them choices. I read a parenting book one time and it said, always give your kid choices. Do you want to put your pants on or do you want to put your socks on first? Because the kid is so excited about deciding, well, I'll put my socks on first and then I'll put my pants on, that it's not the demand of you need to get dressed and ready for school. You know, when kids feel like they are in charge of making the decision, they are more likely to act. So, I don't know if that helps. I don't know if that's more confusing. I don't know if you feel better educated. I don't know if you feel more confused. I know I've given you a lot of information to think about. And I would like to offer again the phone number. It is 614-403-4545. And the phone lines are always open. They are open during the show, even though the show is recorded. It's not a live broadcast. The phones are always answered during the broadcast. The phones are answered 24/7. So you may call anytime you need. We welcome topics if there's something you want us to discuss. If there's something that we said that was confusing, or if there's something we said that you don't agree with and you'd like to explain to us why you don't agree with it, we will listen to what you have to say. And, you know, if we've spoken in error, we absolutely want to correct that. The phone number again is 614-403-4545. And on City of Angels Recovery Radio, where they have our promo and our banner, they do have our information for contact information. So if you didn't get it written down, you can go to City of Angels Recovery Radio and find the links for Stop Feeding the Predators. And I'd like to say real quick, we have our slogan, Healing Starts Here. And the reason for that is, with Stop Feeding the Predators, we are opening up dialogue. We are opening up conversations about childhood sexual assault. And when adults are able to have a conversation in public about sexual assault, and I am not talking graphic details, when they're able to talk about sexual assault comfortably, it opens the door for children to say, hey, this happened to me. It also opens the door for adults who were sexually assaulted when they were kids to finally say out loud, I was raped when I was little and I never told anyone. And that's why we say it. You have been listening to City of Angels Recovery Radio's broadcast of Stop Feeding the Predators. And healing starts here.